Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus, containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins and zero sugar. It was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all and tastes amazing. Look for Smart Energy in the beverage aisle at your local Kroger, Albertsons, and Safeway grocery stores. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused.
Hello again, Earth people. It's me, the High Time Queen from the Space Bunker Temp Services. Apparently, Season 2 concluded last week, and Season 3 is still a little ways off in the future, but no one ever sent me a transport to get out of here. I better be getting overtime for this. Mama owes some scary people some money. Anyway, I've been snooping around up here and I found all sorts of crap. And I'm just gonna start uploading stuff every other week until somebody stops me. Please, somebody stop me. This week, it's some behind-the-scenes bullshit, and then after that, it's something called Offices and Bosses Season 1, so you'll want to stick around for that. Speaking of offices and bosses, there's some blinking text on this monitor telling me I should mention there are some sweet Offices and Bosses shirts available on PodSwag, along with Magic Tavern magnets and more. That's podswag.com/magic. Okay, there is a blinking text over here now. Okay, apparently, there's going to be 2 live Magic Tavern shows at Gen Con again this year. 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Friday, August 2nd at the Schrott Center for the Arts in Indianapolis. All of those words sound made up. Tickets are already on sale. Someone should probably have announced this last week then. Not my problem. Anyway, for links to tickets, go to hellofromthemagictavern.com and click on the live shows link. Okay, let's just get to it. Let me divert this audio feed. I think maybe I just plug this in here. Looking for affirmation from anyone? Anyways, this is a simulation of the cast of the podcast talking about starting the show and recording the first episode. Enjoy!
Hey everybody, it's Behind the Magic Tavern, which is what I'm branding this, because when we put up some video content forever ago, I think we used that in the Facebook post and we called it Behind the Magic Tavern, which seemed like a pretty good name.
I think that's
so
a
I'm
good
pushing
name.
That for this.
Yeah.
You know, the show that you love where your favorite actors and performers and behind the scenes people from Hello from the Magic Tavern just talk about how great we personally are and why you should love us give us all
it's
your
very
money.
Very nasal gazing.
I love the name.
Naval gazing.
Just to give some options.
Yes.
Can we call it Behind from the Magic Tavern?
Yeah, I think that's good. What about From Behind the Magic
From Behind
at the Magic Tavern?
At the Magic Tavern.
How about we just call it From Behind? And hey, I'm Arnie Niekamp. I play Arnie Niekamp.
This is Adol Rafai. I play Chunt.
This is Matt Young. I play Usador the Wizard.
This is Ryan DiGiorgi, and I'm a producer on the show, and sometimes editor, and sometimes Craig as well. Usually Craig.
Yeah.
That's what it says on your Tinder, right?
Sometimes Craig. Yeah. And they're like, is that a sex thing I don't know about? I've got to date him just to find out.
You should know I'm a sometimes Craig.
Kind of a sometimes Craig. Yeah.
I'm a total sometimes Craig. Let's talk a little bit about starting the podcast and like specifically like doing that first episode.
No.
Yeah, right before we started recording, Arnie and I mentioned that like this is a thing we've probably talked about quite a bit in panels and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it feels like we've kind of said these things somewhat. But I can start off by saying that I remember very clearly sitting at my desk and writing out the Usador name the night before we were recording. And I was putting words into Google Translate and then bastardizing them to come up with the weird Elvish and Dwarvish names and such, but I couldn't come up with a good name. I didn't have Usador. I had all the other stuff kind of mostly worked out. And then the next day at work, I found a wizard name generator online, which is a thing that actually exists. Or it might have just been like a D&D name generator or something. Yeah. I just pressed the button a bunch of times. And I was like, Usador. I like that.
Hello. I'm Usador, wizard of the 12th realm of Ephesius, Grand Master of Light and Shadow, persuader of magical delights, devourer of chaos, champion of the great halls of Tarakas. The elves know me as Fiang Yalak. The dwarves know me as Zonin and Hung Stangus. And I'm also known throughout the realm as Gasmundius Maestar.
What was that name again?
I am Usador, wizard of the 12th realm.
I love that that's the origin of this highly creative podcast, as you asked the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like Childish Gambino. It's like, well, I got my rap name from a Wu-Tang rap name generator.
Yeah.
I think I first heard that when you mentioned it when we were doing a panel at some convention. Mm-hmm. I think I like laid my head down on the table.
Yeah.
But it is also, fair. I think it is like, there's some like Isidore or something. I've seen that come up a bunch. I think it's just like a name. It is sort of like a name.
Like a Nordic.
Yeah.
Charm word.
Yeah. Isidore, maybe.
There's some Tolkien names that are similar to Usador. But that, I don't know. I was just like, I really wanted the titles to be right. And every time I would like bastardize one of those words, I'd be like, can I be Zonin? I hate that. I don't want to call myself that all the time.
Yeah.
But I like it as a title. And it was like all those words I came up with, I was like, they're fun and they're weird, but it's not a thing I want to say over and over again.
How'd that work out?
Not great, because I fully expected those titles to also be like a thing I knew that I would say one time, and like they'd come up occasionally and slightly get mentioned. If I met an elf 20 episodes later, it'd be like, oh, by the way, you may know me by a different name. Kind of like Gandalf. Mm-hmm. Like you don't find out till way later on that he's Mithandrir or whatever they call him in the White City. I forget the correct name.
Real quick, if I can just complain. I'll just take 1 minute.
What are the odds?
Wait a second. Yeah. Fuck you. To me, the most confusing part of The Lord of the Rings, like I was baffled as a teenager when I saw it, was when Gandalf dies and then they see him in the forest and they're like, Gandalf. And he's like, who? And they're like, Gandalf? And he's like, I don't know who Gandalf is. I'm Gandalf the White. And I remember sitting in the theater being like, did I miss something? Like
that Gandalf is in that name.
Like if someone came up to me and they're like, Adel? And I'm like, what? Who do you want? Adel? I'm Adel Rafai. Like it's just such a weird. I'll talk about the first time, and this has been talked about again in panels, but maybe never on air to the masses. But Arnie approached me. I remember you approached me at Rob White's wedding.
Yeah.
And I remember you being drunk. You remember you being sober. So I think I might have conflated the weddings.
I have been drunk at almost every wedding I've gone to. But this one, I'm pretty sure I wasn't. It was like the first time back out in the world after my daughter was born.
But I believe it was Rob White's wedding. And you came up during the reception and you said, listen. And Arnie has this great way of coming up and putting his hand on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he's so tall. And it feels very comforting. Mm-hmm. So he came up and went, listen, I got an idea for a podcast.
And am I Dennis Miller on painkillers?
Listen, babe, I got an idea for a podcast.
Cha-cha.
Cha-cha. But you ran through the premise of the podcast, and you seemed like you were bracing for me to be like, you fuck. But I was like, oh, great. Yeah, let me know. I'm in. And you seemed surprised.
Uh-huh.
So that was – I remember the first time you –
Well, he wasn't talking to you. He was talking to someone next to you. That's why he was so surprised.
He's just leaning on me.
I was like, listen, Rob White. I definitely want to talk more about both of your characters and kind of what you had in your back pocket, like what you were thinking about, like going into the first episode. But like the backstory of the podcast itself was like, I just really love podcasts. I'd done several where I was basically myself. And
what about for this one?
For this one,
yeah, did you get your name from an Arnie name generator?
I looked it up online. And I was like, oh, I hope I don't have to say this in every episode. And I basically, like, I love doing them, but they're a lot of work and never really gotten much more than kind of like some local interest of people like, you know, improviser friends listening to them. And so I was like, all right, I can't do this anymore. It's too much work. No more podcasts. But then I just started, you know, it's one of those things where I started just having two or three ideas and they just kind of wouldn't go away. And then this one kind of kept rumbling in the back of my head, just a fantasy podcast that was just a chat show and just kind of slowly having story creeping in. I haven't talked about this much, but I think originally the idea was that I was not from Earth, that I was just like, it's almost like that sort of like Black Cauldron thing of like that fantasy tradition of like young farm boy in a magical world.
Sure.
He just doesn't know that the whole world is coming towards him, right? The world's at war and things are about to change.
He's almost like Lord of the Rings, where it's like once you step out the Shire, it's like, I don't know what is out there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just sort of like him learning about these things and sort of realizing the whole world is like slowly like heading towards some kind of a fantasy apocalypse. But as I thought about it, I really also wanted there to be this element of people sending in emails and things.
Well, the power of podcasting to a certain extent is that connection that you have with people and the way it is very personal to the people who listen to it in a way that like television and movies just aren't. And even like traditional radio isn't. You know, like there's a different...
You feel like you're hanging out with friends, like it's an intimate. Yeah.
And I really did want it to be like a show. And like I would in my brain, like not in a way where I was like, I got to figure this out, but just as like an intellectual exercise that or this thing that would just tumble around in the back of my head, like always trying to solve what it was like was always like, it just seems like I'm bending over backwards to explain like in this world, everyone sends these things and I'm recording it into that. And these are all little things that we do on the show quite a bit, actually, like magical analogs for things. But it also quickly realized that it was like, well, if I'm just a human and this is really literally a podcast, then it just makes the structure weirdly. It makes the structure make a lot more sense. And also then I just really started to tickle myself with this idea of, you know, someone who should be off having an amazing adventure, but they're just really invested in starting a podcast.
That sort of reminds me of the Transdimensional Delivery Man, where it was like, we have to have a conceit where we can get packages. And then there was one episode, and then every other episode, it's just like, all right, we got packages. Yeah. There's nothing to say.
Those first episodes, every little thing, we were just sort of like, how do we explain this thing, and we don't really worry about that as much anymore.
But in a good way, though, I think. I think it's good to have that stuff up top to show that we're thinking about it and care about it. But like, also that becomes a burden to the listener as well as us after a while, I think, to be like, I don't need to know why everything is recorded. I don't need to know why everything is – it's fine. I'm in, you know.
But I also wanted to say the reason that I was like the part of the story that brings Matt and Adel into it is – I love like improv interview. It's like a really good structure. Like it's a good like exercise you do a lot in classes and things because it just makes it kind of easier for anybody to kind of, it's something to latch on to basically. But if I was going to do a podcast where it was improvised and the guests were creating a bunch of stuff about this world, but in that situation, it would be very hard for me to be the protector of that story and that world if I am the fish out of water character, you know. So I very quickly realized to do something like this, it would be almost impossible if it was just me interviewing a guest.
Every episode is you being like, what's this now?
Yeah. And that could be fun. And that's actually the structure of a fair number of improv podcasts. But like if we wanted the story, if we wanted some kind of like serialized aspect or this real feeling like a world is being built, you need people who are there to help protect that and to remember that stuff. And so realizing that I needed co-hosts was probably the best thing that could have happened for this podcast. Unfortunately, I picked you too.
Can I
read? I found. I'll just read a snippet of it. It's a fairly long email. But on Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014, this is after the wedding, you sent an email that said, guys, let's start chatting about this. I'd love to get this up and running early in the new year. You said, Adel and Young are the main ... sidekicks, I guess. Ideally, one of you would be in every episode, occasionally both. Also, I suppose after things get going, some episodes could have neither.
hopefully we'll get to a point where we can wean off of you.
Yeah,
guys.
Pretty soon we'll have neither of us. And then I just want to mention that the same day, about an hour later, I responded to your email. And I said, super excited to be a part of this. Can we maybe meet in the next week to spitball? I call dibs on the giant talking animal. Also, let me know if he needs an accent.
Giant?
Yeah, I put... I want to be. I call dibs on a giant talking animal, huh. And I said, "Let me know if he needs an accent."
Interesting.
And I'm so glad I didn't do an accent.
I like that you were hoping he would say, "Yes, he needs an accent."
I remember talking. I mean, Adel and Matt, you are two people who that I really performed with forever, and just love performing with. I was excited to do this podcast with, and really, it wouldn't exist, like kind of as you say, Adel, if I hadn't said it to you, because I, in my mind, I wasn't looking to really do it. Like, it was a fun intellectual exercise, and really, I think all I wanted was to share the idea with someone that it tickled me. Like, I didn't want to just live in my head, because like, what's the point of that? Like,
you wanted to validate it.
I need some kind of validation. So, you know, just telling you was just kind of like, isn't this a clever idea that I had? And you were immediately like, yeah.
I remember being very enthused.
Yeah. I also remember you, I could be misremembering this, but I feel like I remember you almost immediately saying, can I be a shapeshifter? I think even the aspect of like, can I be a shapeshifter who changes shape?
When he
sleeps with somebody. Why did that just tumble out of your brain in that moment? Do you have any
memory
of that?
I've always liked, whether it be like comic book characters or whatever, or in fantasy realms, or even like, what is it, in Deep Space Nine, Otto? Or what's the guy's name?
Odo.
Like, since I was a kid, I've always loved the aspect of shape-shifting. So I'm like, that would be my number one ability if I could have an ability. So I immediately wanted that. And then I could be whatever animal I wanted or anything I wanted. And then I remember thinking, like, there should be some sort of, like, different spin on it. And so for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, whatever he sleeps with, that's what he becomes. And I think at first it was like, after Chunt sleeps with something, it's like 45 days later he changes. Or it was something insane. And then I think we realized
the hang-ups of
that. And then we were like, oh, that's only if I'm in love. But, you know, and we sort of swept it away. But, yeah, I think I just wanted to put a little bit of spin on the ball. Just to have something that I could kind of claim my own. Because I haven't heard of any other shapeshifter doing that.
No, not that I know of.
Marvel, DC, cowards.
I also remember, and I don't know if this was, I remember this as being literally like the four sentences in a row that we said to each other about this during the wedding. And I feel like I also imagined you looking off for a second, smiling, and then saying, can I be called Chunt? And I said, if you have to.
I'd believe that. I'd absolutely believe that. I feel like you were also at some point mentioned a badger. So I feel like I give you credit for thinking of badger.
I definitely, I don't remember. I do remember I probably steered it towards being some kind of small animal.
You mentioned Narnia.
Yeah,
like,
because.
Like the badger in Narnia or something.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, just those animals. Because I really, that's such a... I liked the idea of that kind of fantasy being shown in pretty early, like not just high fantasy wizards and kings and things, but like
the creatures
friendly
underfoot.
Talking animal that you meet when you fall through a wardrobe into a magical land.
I like that aspect of the show, that it's a mishmash of all different types of fantasy tropes and they can all live side by side because, all high fantasy all the time would get pretty boring.
Oh, we should have called ourselves All High Fantasy all the time. And this show should be called Maybe I'm Misremembering.
Ryan, how did you first get recruited to the show?
Well, you reached out to me and Evan, I think, around the same time. Maybe we were even on the same email or something about like, hey, I have this idea. You sort of gave the brief pitch, I think. And then it was like, would you guys want to help produce, do like sort of like background, like technical stuff and like also, you know, contribute ideas as, you know, as it comes. And I remember thinking about it because I was like, oh, it's such a cool idea, but do I have time to do it? And I think I even got back to you saying, like, I don't think I have time.
I remember both you and I think Evan both being like, it's probably going to be a no.
Well, I think what I said, because I was like, that's like such a funny idea, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to. I had been doing a lot of like editing and behind the scenes stuff that I wasn't contributing creatively to. And I was like, oh, I want to focus more on my own stuff right now and blah, blah, blah. And then you give a pretty good pitch of like, listen, I want this to be collaborative. I think you would have a good perspective and could do contribute to it that way. I was like, okay, cool. I'll try it. I'll help with the first couple episodes. And then when we started recording, I was like, oh, this is too fucking funny. I have got to be involved with this.
Well, and also we all thought it was going to be like 10 episodes and then be over.
Oh, we absolutely all thought this would not go anywhere.
I wasn't like, this is definitely going to take off.
Not in a way that was like so fatalistic.
But I had done enough podcasts that had done well, that just sort of fizzled, that I was like, this seems like something that is interesting enough that if I was ever going to do a podcast that had a chance of getting any kind of greater attention, that this could be it.
And I don't mean that even in a negative way of like, oh, this idea isn't that good or blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was like, you know, you do projects and they go on for a little while and then they fizzle out.
It didn't
a lot
feel
of times.
Like a 4-year commitment at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you try stuff and sometimes it sticks and it does okay. And like this has succeeded beyond what I think any of us initially thought. And that's awesome. But I definitely didn't think that up front.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons that I definitely wanted to bring you and Evan on. You know, I'd done all these podcasts where I'd edited them myself and I was not particularly good at doing it. And it was like a lot of work and not good. And I knew if I wanted to do another podcast, I was like, it has to sound good. And, you know, I want to really collaborate with someone that is good at that stuff.
Because you got to have somebody who can edit comedy.
Yeah.
And understands the timing of comedy.
Yeah. And it wasn't just like, I don't want to do that. It was like, I want it to be good. Like, I want it to be good in the way that it actually even outperformed my expectations of how good it could be. Like, I think the sound effect language of what the show is just as big a deal as any of us individual characters. Like, it's not overbearing. It's got this sort of like language to it that like is easy to follow, but really is immersive and funny. And it doesn't try too hard to make you think it's real, but it does it enough to make you think it's real.
And I think a lot of listeners probably don't pick up on this, that sort of sound language of the show. But I remember the first time announcing that I was getting up and leaving the table and listening to the fully produced episode and hearing the little squeak as the chair moved out. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Like those little things that like I bet most listeners don't even pick up on, but it just makes it feel real in a way. In an interview format show, to have like those things that sweeten it are really important to make it special.
It also leads to a lot of people, I feel like early on, and maybe still not, but probably not. But I feel like early on, that kind of amazing production value was what led a lot of people to think it was scripted. Because you'd say, I'm getting up to leave, and you hear the chair push away. You'd say like, this food's poison, and hear a smashed glass or something. So it's a thing of like, people are like, well, how else would that sound be in there unless you scripted it? And it's like, no, we just improvise it, and we might mime object work. But then Ryan puts in sound effects, or Evan, or whoever was editing. But to me, that led to a lot of people disbelieving it was improvised. I think at this point, people are like, oh, that's totally improvised.
That was what was so fun about editing the first episode. Like, have you guys, did you guys watch Home Movies? That old
cartoon? Oh, yeah, I used to.
Yeah. That was like my go-to. Yeah. My go-to example of an improvised show that could still fit a format like that.
That was improvised?
Yeah. They had outlines, but they improvised a lot of it.
Damn.
Yeah, it's Sean Benjamin and all that. And so, like, I would watch that show thinking about how do you do that? And a lot of, like, the stuff I loved on Home Movies was the stuff happening in the background that you could tell the animators or an SFX person added based on what was being said. And so when we did that first episode, I was like, how much do I have to do of like, well, they're just at a table, so hopefully it's not going to get crazy. And then I think in the first episode, some spell, and maybe not, maybe the second episode, some giant spell goes off or whatever, and we start seeing some of the possibilities. But the idea of like, you know, a joke and then a punctuation with glass break or chair or whatever, I feel like it can time into the comedy really well. And I think we talked about like also in that episode of like, how do we, like, how much do we leave laughter in? Do we, like, take it out? Like, I feel like figuring out that flow in that first episode was super
fun. We take it out, right?
It's all taken out.
All the laughter. Oh,
I know you've never heard the show before, but
it's taken out for the listener.
Should feel ice
as well.
Cold, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that was when I listened to the first couple episodes after we released them. I remember being like, "This feels really warm and like it's way more listenable than that or palatable than most podcasts." And then I realized it was like that fireplace sound, like the crackle, and I'm like, even that having something versus like dead silence in the background does so much for how you consume what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think it really feeds into that idea that the listener feels like they're at the table in this like hygge environment with a fireplace going and everything.
One thing that plays into that and kind of plays into the sort of SFX feeling as well is like we decided earlier to have you guys on separate channels. So like Usador is always a little bit on the right, Chant's always a little bit on the left, and Arnie's in the middle.
And like the three little bears.
It is. I think it like subconsciously gives you a space, like you're at the table. Like you see, it's easier to tell like where virtually everybody is.
They're not called the three little bears. I think they're just called the three bears.
I think, well, they were all unusually short.
I remember at one point getting so comfortable with Ryan and Evan and Chris and like whoever's in the booth. I remember getting so comfortable that it would be like at some point where it's like we turn Usador into a tiny Usador and make him chop up. You know, like I remember saying like the most insane thing and then like looking to you in the booth and you like putting your head in your hands or like me giving a thumbs up or like I just remember like it got to the point where I'm like, I think they can handle this. Or even like with the email stuff where I'd be like, yeah. And I'm Chunt at gmail.com, Chunt with six T's, and you scrambling to like pull up Gmail.
Register that address.
Let me grab this email.
Well, that was funny. You were like, I'm Chunt at gmail.com. And I think we had to stop and go, that's too short
for
Gmail address.
That's right. You go, I tried to get it and it's too short. And I'm like, well, let's go back and
see.
You're
like, oh, Chunt with six T's. You know, I think the first big one was Tiny Horse, where you were like, oh, it's a tiny horse that I'm going to ride around on this table and go like left, right, panning. And that was the first like giant sound effect I think we did that was like, okay, we get how to do it now.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Do you remember, Ryan, much about recording that first episode? The studio was a bit different. We were all in the same room. Were you kind of like back to us or...
Couple of different orientations. I think I was off to the right, I think, from you guys. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of your backs were to me. It was a little bit of a weird setup. I remember being nervous because it was my first time using any of that equipment. So I'm like, I know the principles here, but let me make sure I don't ruin this podcast. But once we started sort of getting levels, it was okay. But at the time, it was sort of like, we don't know like how this is going to sound. So it was very, especially because you guys were all so close together that separating you was a lot harder back then than it is now. I think if you had to like put, I think it's just the air.
It's rain.
Oh, is it?
No, and this won't have the forgiving oral backdrop
of the tavern.
I think that's definitely
or
rain.
Will it
hit it?
Da 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 da. But yeah, no, it was definitely like my main like source of being nervous was like, I hope I don't ruin this podcast these guys are working on. But then, once we started like getting into it, it was really great.
Do you have any memories from editing? Because you did that first episode and we kept them pretty short to start. And I vaguely remember us editing that first one down quite a bit.
Yeah, it was. I think we recorded for at least 30 minutes, but it was only 17 that we kept, which there've never been another episode we've edited that aggressively.
Do we have that extra 13?
I think so. I'm not 100%.
I want to listen to it.
Yeah. I don't think it's put together, but I think we have the raw files.
It's probably
a lot of like, what do we do now?
What else can we call the main road?
I mean, I don't think we like stopped, but there was probably just a lot of like going down side paths that just kind of never led to anything.
Yeah.
That's what it mostly was. Although there was the one famous time we stopped that loves to mention.
You
was that the first episode? It was like literally one of the first things.
You referenced it in an episode very recently.
In the wedding episode, you joked where you're like, listen, buddy, it's your wedding. You don't have to remember the world or something.
Continuity doesn't matter.
You don't have to remember the continuity. I'm like, oh, that's great. Being a 900-year-old shapeshifter. Because in the first episode,
right. Arnie was like,
anything you want to do, let's do it. And Arnie was like, how old are you, Chunt? And I'm like, I'm 900 years old. And he goes, let's not do that.
Yeah. I know. I literally stopped it within seconds. Because that's too old. You got to be the buddy. You're the like, that's too old, right?
Yeah, you got to be Mel Gibson, not Danny Glover.
Yeah. You're the Mel Gibson.
No.
The other big thing from editing the first one was creating the bunker stuff because we wanted to have like sort of a radio like being interrupted and then go into Tim. And we did this like doubling up of his voice where it was like warning, which I think we did for maybe 5 episodes and then stopped doing it. But like all of those, we were editing in Audacity, which had a lot less flexibility. So all of those like radio in and out, like warp sounds that were phased destructively and then kept for future episodes. Mm. So like it can never sound different than that unless we rebuild it, but it's worked for, 200 episodes.
It seemed obvious to me in that first episode that the mysterious man character had some kind of like agenda and that you weren't supposed to take it that seriously. But so many people, I would say the majority of people didn't really catch on to that, and it was sort of and we to this day get emails from annoyed people who are listening to early episodes being like, love the podcast, why do you have to start by telling me it's not real?
Right,
it's such a funny
so
idea
people,
being
yeah.
like, do you not understand? Yeah. Do you not understand how
I am trying
fiction
to,
works?
Yeah.
I want escapism, and you're immediately breaking the reality.
Yeah. We've got emails where so people much, are like, yeah. I don't know if there's some kind of regulation where yeah. you have to...
a regulation.
Yeah. Ever since World of the Wars, there's been a regulation. We have to say Martians aren't really invading.
That's wild.
Does anybody remember, maybe just first episode would be too hard, but like initial reaction? Like when the first episode or first few actually came out on iTunes and everything else, do you remember people's reaction or when we started to get maybe more notice?
AV Club was the first time I remember having
AV
a big
Club,
reaction.
BuzzFeed, and Max.
Oh, yeah, BuzzFeed.
I feel like those three things led to a huge uptick.
It's funny how like you do it for a while, and listeners will not be surprised by this, but you can do like 12 episodes and they'll like go by in a flash, and you'll peek your head up and be like, oh gosh, it's been 12 episodes, it's been 30, 40, yeah. 100 episodes. But when I think back to the things in the first stretch of episodes, like it seems like it must have happened over the course of a lot more episodes. Like I'm always surprised when I go back and realize how short that period of time was. Because like the 13th episode, I believe, is Boys Night. And that episode is so, I think, joyful. I remember it being like us being so kind of like gleeful and having such a good time. And I think of it as a celebration of us being like, I think this podcast is really taking off in some way. And the idea of knowing that in any way by episode 13 seems crazy to me.
And I think that was our first episode with just the three of us since the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a palpable joy to that.
I had a strange experience of people that we know. Either they were coming in to record, or I would see them at I.O. and they would just be like, oh, the podcast's really good. Listen to it. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And they'd be like, no, it's really good. And like that weird like, oh, like they're not just saying it to say it. Like they're excited about it. And people were like, wanted to be on it, you know, and like not even that it was like getting popular, but like our own peers heard it and were like, that's fun. I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
I always remember the thing that like really got me was Charlie being like, I offhandedly mentioned Spintax the Green as my rival in an episode, which is a name I just pulled out of my ass in the moment. Had no plan to have a rival, or it was just like, oh, I got to say something. And then getting an email, Arnie got an email from him of like, Charlie's like, I am Spintax the Green. Like, I am taking that. It's mine. I want it.
And the just talking about the weird ways that time can seem longer and shorter, like, I remember him sending that email, and I remember being like, that's awesome. I want you to be Spintax. Let's not do that right away. Let's let Spintax build for just at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing that. But then when I look back, like, that Spintax episode is like
16 or 17, yeah, something.
It's not that. It's like, what was this period of waiting? I feel like people always talk about the finger to spider joke as a joke.
With consent.
That's with consent.
A part of the important part of the joke.
Where I come from, having sex with animals is a little bit frowned upon. Is that not the case here? Like, Usador, what is the general thought on having sex with animals in Foon?
I think we've all fingered a spider. It's just a... when you're a young wizard learning your way about the world, you encounter certain animals out in the wild as you become one with nature and commune with the powers that be in the universe, and sometimes that happens in a sexual manner. I see nothing strange about this.
How would you... I don't think I want an answer, but I don't know how you could physically finger a spider.
Consent.
Okay, well, that's good. That's a good start.
If people talk about that first episode and being hooked in at that first episode, I feel like they almost always mention that fingered a spider. We've all fingered a spider with consent. It's also, to me, in retrospect, shocking for something successful how much we talk about bestiality in that first episode.
Is the first episode where we say, what do you call a human that's had sex with a shark?
Oh, yeah, a dead human.
Yeah.
It's funny because I think there are a couple things that happened in that first episode. You're getting me to repeat my name. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it all the time. Didn't think I was going to do that. And the idea that, like, we can just have a slightly – I guess I came into it thinking more like I'm going to have to answer these questions very seriously in a way, like within my character's point of view. But the spider thing specifically was like you'd ask Chunt about it because it was something that happened to him. And then you kind of turn to me for like validation of like what Chunt is saying is fucking crazy, right? And you're like, how do you finger a spider? I'm like, well, with consent. And then realizing like, oh, the answers can be – it should always be a step off. Like I think Adel and I get to play the game of like whatever you're looking for, we can be a beat off of that because we are from this other world and we process things differently and we think about things differently. And that's a really fun game. That
absolutely.
We get to play all the time.
Is there anything you really didn't know about your character? Not just how has your character changed over time, but like what do you feel like was very different or off about your conception of what that character would be? Thinking back, you're like, oh, God, I can't believe I thought this about that character.
For one, I thought Chunt was going to shapeshift way more often. I feel like I've done a little bit of it, but over 200 episodes, I've shapeshifted maybe 6 times or something.
Yeah.
Why is that, do you think? I've always wondered why you did that.
If I'm being honest, I think once fan art started happening, which to me is like the best part of doing the show is like the fan art we get. Once I saw the fan art and like got to love the idea of this little badger that people created in my mind's eye, then I was like, I kind of want to leave him a badger as often as possible. So I think that's why I always find my way back and because it's so enjoyable for me to picture that.
What if you're being dishonest?
If I'm being dishonest, I thought I'd be 900 years old.
If I am being completely honest, I know it would be less fun for you, Adel, in the long run. And also, like, probably ultimately, like, it doesn't leave as many interesting roads to go down. I was always tickled by the possibility that Chunt was not a shapeshifter at all. This idea that he's just
a badger,
and that's a story that he tells.
Yeah, I remember that being a conversation behind the scenes of like, what if it eventually comes to fruition that we find out you're just a badger who's been bullshitting the whole
thing? Yeah, and I get that that's like, it's such a great punchline to that idea, but then, you know, then it just leaves you being a badger and like, there's less fun stuff to explore, but that always seemed really funny to me.
It's also funny of like, oh, I thought you were magical. And it's like, yeah, I'm just a giant talking badger. Like, no magic.
I was lying.
Well, I think it's that our improv brain wants to like do a hard right turn and pull the rug out from something, you know, to like just to surprise people, you know. It's like that's kind of part of how we approach things and how we come up with interesting ideas. I think what changed for me is I thought – This is going to sound terrible. I thought Usador would be a much more revered character in a way of like, oh, he's Gandalf in this world, you know? And like, I thought he'd still be dumb and like bad at stuff in a way, but he still wouldn't think he's bad at stuff. But the fact that everyone sort of like knows he's kind of a fuck up.
I feel like Charlie kind of established that firmly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's great. I mean, it's a great gift to be given as an improviser. And it makes him so much more fun and so much more human.
He's like the Ignatius of the
Yeah, and I think he's really like, I think he is a competent, powerful wizard still. He's just like, all of his bullshit is in the way, which is really fun. It's
he's
like,
actually a great wizard. He's just a bad person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kind of.
Bird shit.
Yeah.
He's not a bad person. He's bad at being
a
person.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, because he isn't a person exactly. Right. Yeah. Like he doesn't quite process things the right way and that's why he tries to put soup in his butt, because he thinks, like, maybe this will help me defeat the Dark Lord, even though that's an insanely stupid idea. He's just willing to try anything out.
Oh, help clean out your colon.
Yeah.
Just from the opposite end.
Arnie, what about you? Because you're playing a character as well.
Yeah.
Did you think you'd be further removed from real Arnie or less removed or what?
I mean, a lot has actually changed about my character, quote unquote character, and like how I play him. It's funny listening back to the early episodes, like I am a lot more of just a sort of sounding board and not like really trying to be funny or that interesting myself. Like I find little moments to do that stuff. Even though my character is ostensibly the least interesting, I really do try to grab on to what characteristics have been given to me, right? Like whatever like things about my character have been laid on, and then being like, well, I'm really bad at math. And I'm not great at math, but I really do make a point of being really bad at math. Or you never get up, or you're very lazy, like really kind of like leaning into those things and being like, that is who my character is.
Yeah.
And I have over time, and maybe this is something we can talk about more later, like as we talk about later episodes, I spent a lot of time becoming a crazier character, like using a lot more like comedy logic of like, this is the weird accumulation of attributes that my comedy monster of a character has become. But then over time started to try to think like, well, who is this person? Like, because of these things, like, and what's going on with him and why is he, like, is there like a charitable way to think about this character as well? But I probably, in retrospect, I'm glad. I love like the Larry Sanders Show where, you know, Gary Shandling isn't technically playing himself, but it more or less is. And that was a show where celebrities did play themselves. And I think there's a lot of interesting tension that comes from just being able to pull stuff from your own life. I think people can kind of feel that. And it's one of the things I just love about improv in general, like especially live improv, like, it's not about suspension of disbelief entirely. Like, it matters who you are. There is a you and there is the character that you're playing. And both of those things are existing at the same time. And there's an aspect of that that is wrapped up in a show about multiple dimensions anyway. And I think that that is itself really interesting. But also, there is definitely an aspect of it being like, was this the smartest thing in the world, playing myself? And I know like early on, the first hint to myself that there were aspects of it that weren't the smartest thing in the world was Adel's like, we got to make missing posters for you and put them up in, around the neighborhood as a way of promoting the podcast.
Yeah, in real life, I wanted to do like a Blair Witch promotion where it's like, let's put posters of Arnie up at the Burger King on Southport or around Chicago. And then I think Arnie was like, oh no. Like,
yeah. I mean, I love that idea in a vacuum. I love that idea. I love anything we do that like creeps into the real world. And we did a lot of that stuff early on and we kind of do less of that now just because there's not time.
Yeah.
But I was also kind of like, I am a real person. This could be a bad.
Something just to mention like your real life playing into the show, something I absolutely love, which is one of my favorite moments of the entire 4-year run, is that I've known Arnie for 11 years.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, on air, I found out that his mom is actually a math teacher, which is so funny to me. And I kept thinking you were joking. Like, I thought you were, like, because it was during an episode.
Uh-huh.
You're like, my mom's a math teacher. And I was like, hold up. Is that real? And you're like, no, it's real. And to me, it's just so funny that that's never come up. Like, both off air and on.
And being like pulling things, and again, like I change things. I make up things about my own life and I change things. And it sounds weird to say that real life details have power to them. I don't think that's, I don't mean it in that way, mm-hmm. but it's just in that way where it's like, there's something about improv. It's the same as like getting a suggestion in improv, or it's the same as like, if you do an improv form where people are telling stories from their own life, like bringing in detail, like the comedy version of what you would make up about who the fish out of water human would be, would probably be less interesting, or they would be a lot more obvious choices, you know, because they would just be the usual comedy choices you mm-hmm. always make up for like a human person.
It's nice that you're you because it doesn't make you this, oh, shucks, I'm just a nice, sweet guy who doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. Like, it gives you weird details that do make you interesting as a character to listen to, and it gives you a character to play that is more interesting than the character you would make up, you know, mm-hmm. because you get to fill it with these things that feel really honest but are idiosyncratic in certain ways. You know?
I did want to say one last thing, which was the coolest thing I think about the first episode from the behind the scenes perspective was, I think the first cut I sent you was very conservatively cut. Like the stuff that was like you guys out of character, if there was anything or anything mm-hmm. like that, a couple of side riffs, but it was like pretty much like everything was in there. And I was like, hey, I left it long on purpose. I don't know exactly what you want from the editors in general. Mm-hmm. Like, do you want us to cut aggressively back and forth? And you were like, oh yeah, if it's not funny, you should just cut that. Like it's, and I was like, oh, okay. Based on like what I think. And you're mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's fine. I feel like giving like Evan and I that power was like pretty great. Like we only ever end up, the editors in general cut like 5 minutes on average, I bet. Like it's almost nothing. And a lot of that is cutting like little pauses and things. But like just the empowering us to mm-hmm. contribute in that way, to be like, oh, well, this will flow a little better without this word. Or actually, this is saying the same thing twice. Let's get rid of it. Was made it very fun to work on behind the scenes and feel like we're sort of shaping the show, which has been really, really fun to do.
That's why we kind of wanted to build a team. And that's why we wanted to bring on people that we're excited to collaborate with, who, besides being good at editing, and you are good at editing, and I'm sure you've just learned a lot doing this. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, I was just sort of like, Ryan is really funny. Like, I trust his comedy instincts. And so he'll cut things that need to be cut. And also he'll create something better than it was to start with.
You know? Yeah. Matt hasn't been on the show for like 60 episodes.
I know.
It helps.
Just cuts it out. Thanks, man.
What? I'm supposed to talk again at the end too, even on this one? I have got to find an employee manual or something. Any code of conduct around here? Anyway, this episode was edited by Garrett Schultz. There, are you happy? This is all I'm doing. See you back here in 2 weeks with Offices and Bosses Season 1. Oh, the first episode is titled Flower from IT. Well, that sounds promising, okay?
I'm Shimon Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now, I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, the competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully, no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.